This is Michael Oku, and you are listening to Wrestle It.
I only do two of these a month, and yet I always forget how to podcast. Welcome to On the Indies, where we love to talk about indies. I am MX Sharp, and I'm joined by...
Adam Ryan. And MX, how are you?
I'm doing all right. How about you, my friend?
Oh, I have been through the ringer the last week or so as we talk here. Wonderful, cool November evening. My voice has been going in and out the last few days, as I mentioned off air. Had food poisoning the other week, so I've been through it. But I'm here, we're going to talk about some wrestling, and we're going to have a fun time.
Yeah, we're going to have a great time.
Because wrestling cures all of our ills.
Yes, yes. It causes some ills, too.
It does.
But it also cures them, so, you know.
That it does.
It all washes out in the end.
It does.
As long as we don't go on Twitter, wrestling cures more things than it causes.
And I'm in a good mood today, so we're gonna have some fun here. Right, by golly.
Awesome. Well, let's start with, I think, one of the wildest things that are happening on the indies tonight, if I am not mistaken.
Yes, as we record this, as we record this, the Wrestling Revolver Unreal Show, and that has never been more apt of a title, is taking place in Los Angeles with Ronda Rousey and Marina Shafir against Athena and Billy Starks. I'm going to stop there before I go down the rest of the card, but what are your impressions of that main event, MX?
My first impression is... what?
That was mine, too.
All right, so a little something about me. I don't watch WWE. I've never watched WWE. I know Ronda Rousey only by reputation. May not be the optimal way to know Ronda Rousey.
May not be. Did you ever watch any of her fights in UFC or no?
No, I'm not a combat sports person. I'm not a fight person.
Okay, I saw a few of her UFC fights, but that was mainly because my friends dragged me to the local Buffalo Wild Wings for me to hang out with them when I watch UFC. So anyway, carry on.
Yeah, and it's just, so it's interesting, right? Because knowing Ronda Rousey only by reputation, you know, my outlook on this may be inaccurate. But the pairing of Ronda and Marina Shafir does make sense on a certain level, right? Because mm-hmm. Marina Shafir, with the UFC background, you know, it makes a lot of sense. There's a lot of similarities in their trajectory. So I right. can see that. And then, you know, Billy Starks beat Marina for that tournament. So, you know, you can definitely see them having beef. And then Billy Starks and Athena are connected on ROH. So, mm-hmm. like, you lay it all like that. I can see the logic. I can see it connect together. I can see it make sense. What is Ronda Rousey doing?
So Ronda Rousey is actually... Let me back up a minute. So Marina Shafir is actually... or was actually one of Ronda Rousey's training partners.
Okay.
In MMA. And when Marina Shafir was in NXT with Jessamyn Duke, who is actually a cousin of mine, like a fourth cousin,
oh, wow.
It was plastered all over NXT. It was plastered over NXT that they were... you know, in this group with Shayna Baszler, who had connections to Ronda Rousey, so they were like the four horsewomen of MMA.
Okay.
And the thing was, like, back during that time, there was rumors and rumblings that they were going to do the four horsewomen of MMA, so Ronda, Shayna, Marina, and Jessamyn against the four horsewomen of WWE, which I believe were Becky, Charlotte, Bayley, and Sasha.
Right.
I may not have that exactly correct, but it's been a while since.
That sounds about right to me.
Yeah, Marina, you know, she fought in, you know, she fought MMA. She got a 1-2 record, professional record in MMA. No UFC fights for Marina. Her last MMA fight was July 9th, 2015 at Invicta FC, where she lost.
Oh. Right, because there's a difference between UFC and MMA. I know facts about things.
Yeah, right. So she lost 37 seconds into round one.
Okay.
By a knockout.
That sounds bad.
Yeah.
Suboptimal, let's say.
I think most people are familiar with Ronda Rousey's MMA exploits, and then her WWE exploits as well. So she's there. She actually did a run in recently on a Lucha Vavoom show or something to that effect there in California where Marina Shafir was wrestling. So that's kind of how this whole thing, she got started in this show. You know, Athena and Billy Starks, like you said, they're tied together on ROH. So there's that.
So I thought that Ronda Rousey was retired from wrestling. Was I right in thinking that at the time, even though that's demonstrably not the case any longer?
So she lost to Shayna Baszler at SummerSlam recently, back in August. It wasn't billed as a loser leaves town match, but that's essentially what it was. Uh-huh. It was an MMA rules match, and it was, be quite honest, one of the worst WWE matches of the year, at least in my opinion, because it didn't connect with the crowd at all.
Right.
At least I thought it didn't. Almost fell asleep watching it, to be quite honest. So she left WWE. She, you know, took some time away. Now she's back doing this. Now, this is also a fundraiser show for the Hawaii wildfires.
Okay.
So she, I think her husband or someone's from Hawaii. So that might be another reason why she's doing this show. Because it says that all profits from ticket sales, at, you know, after production and what have you, going to be donated to the Lahaina Wildfire Relief Fund.
Okay.
So that might be one of the reasons she's on this show. So she's doing it as like a fundraiser, and so she can, you know, kind of raise money for the Hawaiian wildfires. But just looking at her fight history, because I was curious, last time Ronda Rousey had an MMA fight was UFC 207, December 30th, 2016, where she lost by technical knockout 48 seconds into the first round.
Okay.
So she hasn't had an MMA fight in a while. Almost, 8 years? But yeah, she's been in WWE, you know, twice now. It's just be interesting to see her on the indie scene. It really will. I wonder if she gets the bug to work indie shows now.
Or at least maybe here and there. She's never been on the indies, right?
Right, yeah. She's only ever wrestled in WWE.
Right.
So yeah, it's going to be interesting just to kind of see how she's presented on the indie scene. Because in WWE, she was all presented, at least her first run, she was presented like the smiling baby face. She'd come out, she'd have a big smile on her face, she'd be dressed like Roddy Piper, and she'd just come out and dominated everybody. And that got kind of old after a while, honestly, I thought.
I mean, I think it always gets a little old when somebody comes in and they're like, hey, I'm so happy, and also I'm winning everything. It's like the Cody Rhodes disease, right?
Yes. But she debuted, I mean, her first match was on WrestleMania 30, God, I've lost track which one it was. It was her and Kurt Angle against Triple H and Stephanie McMahon, whichever WrestleMania that was on.
Oh, a mixed tag match. Joy.
Last one they did in New Orleans, whichever one that was. I want to say it was like WrestleMania 34 or something like that. I can't remember. But that was the best match on the show, honestly.
Oh, interesting.
So.
I can't tell if that is a compliment to the match or a diss against the show.
Both.
Okay.
That was a long damn 5 hour show. That was like the 852nd time they did.
Yeah.
In a year and a half, they did Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns.
Yeah.
So,
how do we feel about Ronda potentially being a person on the indies? Do we think that that's likely? Do we think that that's good? Hey, folks, Editing MX here. Upon reflection and a little research, I've come to regret the ambiguousness of my language in this segment, so I just want to take a moment and make something perfectly clear. Ronda Rousey's history of flagrant transphobia is, to my mind, disqualifying for her presence on the indies. There are many amazing trans wrestlers doing incredible stuff right now, and this is their house. They're showing up, they're putting in the work, and they are instrumental in building wrestling into a safer, nurturing, and more inclusive space for everyone. I'm not saying reconciliation is completely impossible, but those efforts need to be led and directed by the people who are harmed most by her statements and actions. These are only my opinions. I'm not putting any words into Adam's mouth or anyone at Wrestlin's. I am just personally not comfortable with the way that we discuss this topic without making it crystal clear where I stand. Fuck transphobia, and thank you guys so much. I hope you enjoy the rest of the show.
I don't know if she'd be, you know, making regular indie shots, but I think if it's a show that she's interested in doing and her friends are on it, like Marina Shafir or somebody like that, yeah, I can see her being involved in it in some way.
Mm-hmm.
Because the internet went crazy when she popped up at the Lucha Vavoom show, and it was like, what the hell? Ronda Rousey? What's Ronda Rousey doing here?
Yeah.
And then she gets announced for this Revolver show. It's like, okay, this is interesting.
I guess we'll see. I guess it will certainly 100% be interesting.
Oh yeah, for sure. And, you know, looking at the opposition, this is a big thing for Athena and Billy Starks to be in the ring with her.
It is. Although it is a little bit like, I don't know. I just think that Billy Starks and Athena are just like so good in the ring. Like they're so solid in the ring. And they're such mm-hmm. great characters. It does seem a little bit of a shame that, you know, this is considered like a really big deal for them rather than like, you know, Ronda Rousey's wrestling two of the hottest like women's acts going right now, I think.
Well, I think so too. And you know I think what I mean? Yeah, and I think whenever Billy and Athena have that split and they end up fighting each other, it's gonna be probably the biggest match ROH can make right now.
Yeah. I mean, and they're so good, you know what I mean? And I just anything involving the two of them together or separately is just always going to be something that I'm going to be very interested in. Like,
agreed.
I'm a little curious about this thing, you know, with Ronda Rousey. Like there's a novelty to it and a sense of potential impending train wreck. But
agreed, yeah, it could be that.
But like when it comes to like actual genuine interest, it is for me certainly driven largely by Billy and Athena. Like I think those are the, like, and like along with Marina, they're the ones who are putting the work in. They're the ones who are working at that, and they're the ones I'm really interested in seeing. You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I'm with you there. I think, you know, I'm more interested in seeing Athena and Billy Starks than I am Ronda Rousey and Marina Shafir, because mm-hmm. I'm just kind of soured on Ronda Rousey after her last WWE run.
Mm-hmm.
But I think, you know, being on the indie scene, having a fresh coat of paint, I think that could maybe help her out a little bit.
Sure, if she wanted to be helped.
Yeah, exactly. She come out, she just kind of does her thing. So that's the headliner.
Right.
So that's
yes.
your main event. Yeah, so also
that's the,
on the
that's
card,
the eye catcher.
Yeah, that's
a lot
your
of good th- stuff on this card.
That's your. But also, you've got Jon Moxley and Sami Callihan teaming up. So they're reviving their CZW Switchblade Conspiracy team against the Rascals of Trey Miguel and Zachary Wentz, former Impact Tag Team Champions.
I've had a soft spot in my heart for the Rascals ever since that one lost bag of weed match. They charmed me so deeply with that one. And then of course I just adore Jon Moxley. And yeah, this will be fun. This will be a good one.
Oh yeah. Jon Moxley on the indies is always fun.
Yeah. I think one of the reasons why I love Jon Moxley so much is because he's so demonstrably passionate about independent wrestling. I feel like he values independent wrestling in a similar way that I value independent wrestling. And like, I feel a really deep connection with him on that one. So it's just, I just love seeing him at Revolver shows and wrestling and being just himself.
Oh, yeah. You know, just going out, just, and you can tell he has so much fun when he goes out and he does these shows. And it's rare that it's rare too that you actually get like a Sami Callihan match announced for a Revolver show.
Yeah,
because I mean, occasionally, and we obviously, yes, it's his company, but he'll, you know, he doesn't wrestle on the shows a lot. I mean, he might pop up as like a mystery opponent now and then.
Mm-hmm.
But I, you know, and these guys, they team together in CZW, so it's gonna be interesting to see how they come back together. I think they were supposed to team up, I want to say they were supposed to team up back in like 2021.
Mm-hmm.
Because I think when Revolver came back after the pandemic, they were going to do a show where they were teaming up together for the first time since CZW. But that was right when Sammy Callahan broke his leg during an Impact taping.
Oh.
So he was out, and they ended up doing Jon Moxley against Jimmy Jacobs.
Mm-hmm.
And Danhausen was on that show, and that's a show where Danhausen broke his leg.
Jesus Christ.
So.
What gives?
I don't know. So also we got Speedball Mike Bailey versus Bounty Hunter Brian Keith. I really dig me some Bounty Hunter Brian Keith. That's gonna be a really fun match.
That rings a bell to me. I can't remember the last match of his that I watched.
So Brian Keith, you're talking about?
Yeah. I know who Mike Bailey is.
Yeah. He's been on Rampage some. He kind of comes out, he's got the old West gimmick kind of going on with the cowboy hat and the, I don't know what that thing that he wears over his shoulders is. It's not like a shawl, but...
Oh, yeah.
So you got... Yeah. So him. There's a five-way world title match. Jake Crist versus Rocky Romero versus Chris Bay versus Allen Angels versus Sonico.
What a list of people.
I know. That's just like... let's pull five random people out of a hat.
I mean, they're good pulls too.
They are, like, yeah. Someone got lucky with those pulls.
No shade, but
Jesus. No. Paul Walter Hauser, who's a Golden Globe winning actor, against Matthew Palmer, the Monster Hunter. So Paul Walter Hauser, he was on AEW recently, or not recently, but a while back, feuding with Jeff Jarrett or Sanjay Dutt or something like that.
Was this like? I remember being really mystified by occurrences that were happening and a man had a Golden Globe. Is this that guy?
Yeah, it's that guy.
Okay. What did he get a Golden Globe for?
That's a very good question. IMDb to the rescue.
I suppose we're not off to a great start if I'm asking what he got a Golden Globe in.
Okay, here we go. Nominated for one Primetime Emmy. 2023 Golden Globe winner for Best Performance. Oh God, this is a long name. Best Performance by an Actor in a Supporting Role in a Limited Series, Anthology Series, or Motion Picture Made for Television.
Uh-huh.
For Blackbird, which apparently aired on Apple TV.
Uh-huh.
Have you seen that show?
I have not even heard of that show.
I haven't either, so there we go.
So we were not off to a great start, and we continue to be in not a great spot.
Just no editing needed here. We're just going to let this roll.
Yep. That's certainly a guy. He has a Golden Globe, technically.
Yep. Mm-hmm. He's got something. We don't know what it is, but it looks important.
Yeah. Good for him.
Gringo Loco versus Rey Horus in the Lucha Dream match. I'm very excited to see Rey Horus popping back up. Really enjoyed him in Ring of Honor in like 2021 when he was there with Bandido and Flamita. And then Masha Slamovich versus Jacob Fatu, which should be a hell of a fight. And then Steve Macklin, one called Manders, Jake something, and what was this? There's a four-way Hoss fight. I gotta find this match here. Hold on. Oh, here it is. Steve Macklin, Jake something, one called Manders, and Slice Boogie from Santino Brothers Wrestling.
I am not familiar with Sliced Boogie. I must confess.
I'm not either, but I mean they've got looks like a really, well, I mean for lack of a better term, unreal show.
I mean, that sounds like the perfect term.
So we'll watch this, we'll do a full report on it on our next episode.
Yeah, for sure. It is tonight as we record, so it should be wild. It should be a very good time. Since we're here and we've mentioned Mike Bailey, his recent gimmick change, I have some questions about.
I'm not familiar.
He started acting like a Street Fighter character, I think.
What?
And I'm not certain about this one, fam. I feel like we may need to go back to the drawing board on this.
Okay, do explain, because I somehow missed this.
So he's got this whole martial arts, I say this with the biggest air quotes I can convey over audio, gimmick, where he's wearing a gi, and he does something that looks like, you know, when you're choosing your fighter, they have a little animation. He does that, and then he does, like, the little bow thing in the beginning of matches. I noticed him start to do that a couple months ago when I was at a show.
Oh, yeah. Okay.
And I was like, sir? Why are we doing this?
I think he did some of that in Impact.
Did he?
Yeah, a while back. I think I remember seeing you, now that you mentioned it, I think I remember seeing him do a little bit of that in Impact.
Mm-hmm.
So...
I'm not sure. I didn't know he was doing. I'm not sure if this is my favorite thing.
I don't remember him doing it on the indies, but
yeah.
I remember him doing like he come out in Impact, he'd do the little bow at the top of the stage, and then go to the ring for his match.
Fascinating.
Which I still haven't seen the Will Ospreay Speedball match. I need to remedy that as quick as I can.
I haven't seen that either.
So, only the second match in TNA/Impact history that got 5 stars or more from Dave Meltzer.
Oh wow.
Yep. Only other match in Impact in TNA history to get 5-star rating or better from Dave Meltzer was the Unbreakable 3-Way from 2005. It was Samoa Joe, Christopher Daniels, and AJ Styles.
Well, if anything was going to get 5 stars from...
Exactly, right?
that would be the one.
I mean, you just start at 5 stars with that match and you work up from there. That's 5 stars is your baseline.
Basically. So that one's just not particularly surprising to me at all.
So I'm gonna have to keep an eye out for this Street Fighter Choose Your Fighter gimmick change that Speedball's doing then.
You know, I liked when he was just Speedball Mike Bailey, and then like I would see him on something and I'd be like, oh, it's Speedball Mike Bailey, and then like be really happy, and then.
Mm-hmm.
And then he has this thing going on, and it gives me a weird vibe. It's like, can we go back to the other thing? And I'm usually somebody who loves a weird gimmick, so I don't know. Maybe it's me. I don't know. Maybe I need to relax.
I mean, he always comes out. He always had the gi on, didn't he? I think he always had the karate gi.
I didn't take particular note of it though.
Yeah. So. I just remember the first time I saw him in Impact, I was like, who is this guy? Because yeah. I'd heard his name, but I'd never seen him wrestle.
Yeah.
He came out wrestling barefoot in a karate gi. Who is this guy?
I'm always so stressed when I see people wrestle barefoot. I'm like,
Yeah, me too.
Okay. Is everything okay? Like that just seems dangerous to me.
Speedball wrestles barefoot. Marina Shafir wrestles barefoot.
It seems uncomfortable.
Matt Riddle wrestled barefoot.
Mm.
Who else did? The Head Shrinkers. Yeah, there's a lot of people who wrestle barefoot.
Yeah, I mean...
I would not do that if I ever had the opportunity. I would not do that.
Personally,
but
I mean...
would wear shoes.
There was one time at one show where I got so excited that I ran up and did like the slapping on the mat thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it was gross. It was really gross.
Oh, those mats are disgusting sometimes.
And I was like, I would personally not walk barefoot on that.
No, I would not either. I had to set up a ring, help set up a ring once, and that was fun, and because this guy's ring was, we were doing a show, I forget what it was for, but we were doing a show in this guy's, at this guy's farm or his cousin's farm or whatever, and the ring was in a barn.
Mm-hmm.
And we had to get the ring out of the barn, and in order to get the ring out of the barn we had to disassemble said ring,
right?
So at those, that mat was gross. It's like, oh god. And those ropes were all beat up, and uh-huh. just, and everything underneath it was just all beat up, and it's like, okay, I wouldn't, yeah, I'm with you, I wouldn't walk around barefoot on that thing at all.
Yeah,
because you never know what could be.
And like a lot of these places, like if you're wrestling barefoot at a GCW show, I would suggest you don't do that.
No. God knows what you'd step in. Glass, thumbtacks. There was a match I saw one time. I forget who it was, who was involved in it. But I know there were thumbtacks and bare feet involved. And someone got slammed down. Someone was wrestling barefoot. And whoever they were fighting, I may have just me be making this up off the top of my head. I don't remember. But I do remember clearly seeing this on television.
Uh-huh.
Whoever this barefoot person was fighting got picked up by their opponent and slammed straight down and dropped feet first on the thumbtacks. And thumbtacks all over the bottom of their feet. I was like, made me, no thank you.
I am a person who loves thumbtacks in matches. And then, like, one time recently, I, like, accidentally stepped on a thumbtack.
Don't do that.
I was such a baby about it.
Don't do that.
And I was like, and I cheer every time there's some horrific thumbtack spot. I'm like, hell yeah, this is what I'm here for.
Jeez.
And it's like, and I can't take it. I'm not exactly dishing it out, but I'm wishing for it to be dished out, you know?
Right. So speaking of thumbtacks, let's talk a little bit about GCW.
Hell yeah, let's do
that was
it.
That was a good segue, wasn't it?
It was an excellent segue. I'm really impressed, actually.
I am too. As we record this, folks, this is the first human interaction I've had pretty much all day, so.
Yeah, we're doing great.
Pardon me if I talk a lot today. All right, so GCW at Russell K Weekend, we gotta talk about this.
We
gotta talk about one thing. We gotta talk about one thing in particular. Here's one thing in particular. One thing in particular on this show.
I can't imagine what that might be.
I need you to explain something to me, NMAX.
Okay.
Why is Violent J of the ICP teaming with Alley Catch and Effie?
Because Insane Clown Bussy is the greatest wrestling team name on God's green earth. They couldn't not. Who's right? Among us does not desire some Insane Clown Bussy?
It's just such a bizarre team.
It is transcendental. It is amazing. It is one of the most perfect things I've ever heard in my life. I cannot believe that it is real, and it is inevitable that it was real. It's perfect. They're perfect.
Right. So I saw GCW announce Violent J for this Thanksgiving weekend show they've got at WrestleCade. Mm-hmm. It's like, okay, that Violent J and GCW kind of makes sense because ICP, they've had their own wrestling federation before, JCW, Juggalo Championship Wrestling, for those who aren't in...
Not to be confused with Jersey Championship Wrestling.
Right. This is the other JCW. Mm-hmm. Where they've had, you know, hardcore matches, and they used to do this show called Bloody Mania at their Gathering of the Juggalos. I don't listen to ICP music. I couldn't even tell you one song ICP's ever done.
Magnus. All I know is that one of them is about Magnus.
And I only know that one of their albums was titled The Great Malenko because they're, you know, huge wrestling fans. But the only reason I know that they do the Gathering of Juggalos is because I once saw a tape of a Bloody Mania show. I was like, what is going on in this universe? It was one of the most bizarre shows I've ever seen in my life. But anyway, Insane Clown Bussy is, you know, Alley Catch, Effie, and Violent J. They're wrestling Ricky Morton, Kerry Morton, and George South. And I saw that match. I was like, what in the blue hell? So George South, for those who aren't familiar, I mean, he used to wrestle in WCW and WWF. He was a kind of like in lower card underneath enhancement talent, for lack of a better term. He also wrestled some as Cruel Connection number one, Gladiator number two, and Mr. Florida. He wrestled in Central States, Mid-South, and Championship Wrestling for Florida back in the mid-80s, so. But yeah, George, apparently he's a legend in this on the Southern Circuit, so.
Okay.
I'm not trying to, you know, say anything bad about George South. I've seen a few of his matches.
Yeah.
So he's a legend in the South, which is why he's teaming with Ricky Morton, who's another legend in, you know, in the Carolinas, and, you know, Ricky Morton's son, Kerry. So that kind of makes sense as why those three are thrown together. Still trying to wrap my head around the whole Alley Cat, Jeffy, Violent J thing, but
it is so beautiful to me, actually. So I'm actually really fascinated by this combination of Insane Clown Posse and wrestling. Mm-hmm. So, like, I first encountered Insane Clown Posse when I was, like, high school, early college. And it was just, like, something that was ceaselessly made fun of and memed on and just, like, a very kind of derided sort of piece of, like, not just internet culture, but, like, in internet culture, it was just considered, like, something very stupid and ridiculous, and people mm-hmm. love to make fun of juggalos and, like, all of this stuff. And it's just, like, really interesting to me to, like, think about that and, like, the interaction with wrestling. And, like, I listened to a little while ago, I think it was on this podcast called You're Wrong About. I'm not entirely sure, but I think it was on You're Wrong About, where it was an interview with somebody who was a juggalo and was talking about, like, mm-hmm. basically, like, juggalo culture and who juggalos are and, like, that kind of whole vibe, that whole feel. Right. And how, you know, a lot of those people are, like, have, like, grown up and become kind of like normal adult people, but like still, and like the way that they as an audience have like matured over time. Yeah, I like, it was just really interesting to me, the way that I've seen some people kind of reconsider and recontextualize juggalos is like really similar to the way that I've seen certain corners of the internet kind of recontextualize and reconsider furries as like this mm-hmm. community of people that are just like pure weirdos and pure cringe, but then like looking more closely at the community and like seeing all like the valuable parts of that community. And it's similar to the way that I have felt about wrestling, because a lot, especially independent wrestling, because a lot of people like to really make fun of wrestling and make fun of the things that are ridiculous and the things that are stupid and meme on it and all of that. But when you kind of like engage with that sort of thing where it is, you can see, you're more able to see value in it. So I've just always been really fascinated about this connection between ICP and wrestling. And I've kind of always wanted to know more about it, but I have not been willing to let myself fall down that rabbit hole. I fall down too many rabbit holes. So, I can't have this. Somebody else needs to write that book. It can't be me.
And I can agree with you too. You see, you know, like with wrestling and juggalos and things like that, you know, I think juggalo culture and, like you mentioned, they do get kind of sort of maligned because they, you know, they have, what's the guy, the Running Man or the Hatchet Man? What's their logo?
Oh, I can't
People
remember.
See that and they see the clown, the clown on fire or the whatever, that they see the album covers and they're just like, you know, what is this? And then they see people all kind of dressed all weird and they're like, these people are strange, but they don't understand it.
Right.
You know, it's like wrestling. It's like, oh, you watch wrestling, isn't that stuff fake? Well, yeah, but, you know, kind of once you get a little bit below the surface, then you realize that, okay, well, these people are, you know, there's a whole community here of people who enjoy this stuff.
There's a whole world, yeah.
And there's a whole world, and, you know, it's not nice to be dismissive of stuff you don't understand. You know, try to take some time, dig a little bit deeper into it, figure out what it is, and if you don't agree with it, that's fine. You know, nobody's asking everybody to agree with everything,
right?
But at least, you know, do your research before you start, you know, hating on something,
right? And it's like I'm not gonna stand here and say that like everything to do with like juggalo culture and like the crazy drug culture that they have and all of that is like good, like ethically good and morally good, and we should just like
right
not like that's not what I'm saying. I'm not even saying
right. No, 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 and I agree with you on that.
But it's like, but it's like when we're so busy being judgmental of like the things that people do for fun, we kind of almost deliberately misinterpret things, and we can't see the meaning in any of it. You know what I mean?
Can't see the forest for the trees.
Yeah, a little bit. So in that light, and you know, I could also say a lot when it comes to like this sort of subject and queerness, and why to me ICP and Bussy make a lot of sense to me as far as like this sort of socially transgressive culture that these people are all coming from, and how like, and how it's ridiculous and zany and sort of rebellious because of the ridiculousness, and it's just fun and hilarious.
Exactly. And it's not meant to be taken like super seriously.
Right.
It's, but, it's like, meant to be go have a, you know, have fun, have a good time, hang out with other like-minded individuals, and, you know, escape the world for however many hours.
And have a great time doing it, right?
Exactly.
And so when I saw that, I just kept repeating Insane Clown Bussy to myself and just giggling. Like, it's so funny. It's so funny. Like, this name that they came up with as a joke when Alley Catch was still Alley Cat and still had this cat gimmick and had, you know, the pussy pile driver move. And, like, and so, like, they just memeing, and it turns serious. Like, not, like, serious, but a real thing. So I'm just delighted. Like, whatever this match is going to be, it's going to be fun, it's going to be delightful, and it's going to be absurd.
Agreed. So do you want my first, so let me tell you, you said your first exposure to ICP. My first exposure to ICP was through wrestling.
Okay.
And it was when they showed up on WWF television and in the middle of the Attitude Era, rapping for the Oddities, you know, Kurgan and Golga and Giant Silva and all that. So that was my first exposure to ICP, seeing them pop up on WWF television. I'm like, I mean, I heard the name. There were some people in school who, you know, wore their merchandise or listened to their music or whatever. So I heard the name. I wasn't familiar with kind of what they looked like or anything like that. But they popped up there on TV. I was like, oh, that's who these guys are. And they were rapping that, they, you know, rapping that song there for the Oddities, and they were there on SummerSlam 98 ringside, and they actually had a match in the WWF, believe it or not.
Mm-hmm. And what was that so, like?
It was a 3-minute, 45-second match on the October 20th, 98 episode of Raw. It was where they lost to Kai and Tai, which was Taka Michinoku, Shofunaki, Minz Teo, and Dick Togo by disqualification.
What an amazing, incredible list of people.
Yeah. Then they popped up in WCW in 99 and 2000.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why they were in WCW, but they were on a couple pay-per-views. They were on Fall Brawl, or they were on Road Wild, where they teamed with Vampiro in a losing effort to Eddie Guerrero, Kidman, and Rey Mysterio, and then those three had a rematch the next month at Fall Brawl. Then they were on some, they actually wrestled some house show matches. I gotta see this match if I can. Insane Clown Posse versus Brian Knobbs and Hugh Morris. I gotta find that somewhere. That sounds bizarre. Oh my god. Insane Clown Posse versus the Public Enemy from Monday Nitro.
I don't know who the Public Enemy is.
Oh my god, the Public Enemy.
Please explain.
Public Enemy was this team, Rocco Rock and Johnny Grunge, from ECW. They were one of the, like, the original hardcore tag teams. They'd had some wild brawls with, like, the Gangstas and the Eliminators and ECW, and they were kind of, they bounced around in WCW, WWF, ECW. You know, they had, like, the whole hip hop gimmick going on. They had like spray painted jerseys and everything. They were really fun. They carried a table to the ring. They had a crazy ass match against the Nasty Boys and on pay-per-view in 96. So at the Bash of the Beach, it was a double dog collar match. It's just absolutely nuts. So yeah, watch if you seek that. Yeah, look that one up if you can. That's a really good match if you want to see, find out who the Public Enemy are.
Yeah, that sounds
good. And then Mike Awesome against the Insane Clown Posse in a 2-on-1 hardcore match and went 2 minutes. That was the last appearance of the ICP in WCW.
Uh huh.
I was like, what the? And then they showed up in R. What the hell? They showed up in ROH?
Like I said, the connection.
Were you aware of this?
No. Like I said, the connection between ICP and wrestling is of endless fascination to me.
Oh, and they were part of TNA too. I forgot about this. When TNA did their, I remember when TNA did their first ever house show, like their first ever non-televised event. Mm-hmm. It was in Michigan. And the reason I could be wrong on this, but I think the reason they did it in Michigan was because the ICP got the arena booked for them.
Mm-hmm.
And the ICP were on that show. They fought Eric Young and Petey Williams. They beat Eric Young and Petey Williams on that card. That's pretty. It's like, okay. So they've got ties. They've got ties all over wrestling. So yeah, this is going to be interesting to see what they. I haven't seen Shaggy 2 Dope pop up in a while, but looks like Violent J just wrestled on the NWA Sam Hain pay per view back at the end of October.
Right.
So, which I don't watch NWA, so.
Me neither, but that's cool.
Oh, that was the show where they did the cocaine spot.
Right. I heard something about this. Was it actual cocaine? Is that why people are so mad?
I don't think it was actual cocaine. I think they were implying that it was. I didn't see the show, so I couldn't tell you.
I don't know.
But there's been discussion. There's been rumors that's what maybe may have killed the NWA TV deal with the CW. And that's why WWE got that deal.
I have heard those rumors. I have also heard compelling arguments for why those rumors are nonsense.
So, yeah, I mean, see, I hear what I hear. Yeah, who can say? I mean, I hear things, you know, everybody has different opinions on different things, so.
Yeah, but
anyway, Violent J, GC, and GCW. We got off on there on an ICP tangent there for a little bit.
Well, I had a feeling that
ICP are important people.
They are important figures in wrestling.
They are, believe it or not, they are very important figures in the history of professional wrestling.
Yes, and you better believe it because it's factually correct.
This is true. All right, also happening in the land of GCW, Andrade was announced for the December show in LA. He is going to be wrestling Joey Janela on a card that also has Johnny Gamechanger and Taya Valkyrie against Maki Ito and Nick Gage.
I loved Taya Valkyrie so much. I am looking forward to seeing more of her. I think I've been doing my best to like avoid a lot of like wrestling Twitter stuff, so I think people mm-hmm. were really mean to Taya last she was on AEW, and to all of those people I would like to say I am very cross with you. I love Taya Valkyrie so much, and
I do too. I think Taya Valkyrie's great.
She's amazing, like her mm-hmm. presence, her look. I think she's fabulous.
Oh yeah, she was great in Impact. I got to see her live when she was with Impact. They did the show. They did a special in Newport, Kentucky, which is just outside of Cincinnati. And she wrestled. Who'd she wrestle on that? I want to say she fought Deonna Purrazzo.
Uh-huh.
And that was, I mean, it was really cool to see her, you know, in person, like the presentation, the lights, the entrance, everything. I mean, she looked like a bona fide star.
The most embarrassing that I have ever been in front of a wrestler is Taya mm-hmm. Valkyrie. I will remember until the day I die how embarrassing I was. It's very unfortunate. I still love her. That wasn't her fault. Well, it was mostly a me problem. No, but she's amazing. I I love to see her. I love to see her more. I'm looking forward to seeing her on GCW. So that's going to be really fun. I'm going to be looking out
for
that.
What are your thoughts of Andrade and GCW?
I don't care about Andrade. I have to be perfectly honest with you.
Okay, that's fine.
I mean, it's like, you know, it's like whatever.
Yeah, it's like, okay, cool. Andrade. It's another big name for GCW.
Yeah. Like, here's the thing. GCW, you know, they kind of get some big names over there, right?
They do.
And so, like, it's good. It's good. I think it's very healthy for wrestling, for, like, when bigger names, like, go and do indies and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think that that's generally a good thing.
Oh, I agree. Yeah. I mean, if you can get people like Andrade popping up now and then to do special shows, you know, for stuff like Kota Ibushi over WrestleMania weekend for GCW. I mean, that's another kind of like big name because he kind of, that was his first match back from injury, I believe. And they brought in some other people too, like some other bigger names. I want to say they over Mania weekend.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I mean, Andrade is pretty decent sized name for them to bring in.
Yeah, and that's great. And I think that that's good, and I think it's good for wrestling when that happens. And I just don't particularly have any feelings about Andrade, if I'm being honest.
That's completely fine. And so there's a match coming up that I'm interested in.
Uh-huh.
It's Blake Christian defending the GCW world title against Little Guido. So I saw that match. I was like, no, you gotta be kidding me. Little Guido's still making the rounds? So are you familiar with Little Guido at all?
I am not at all familiar with Little Guido. I'm excited to
learn. My gosh. So Little Guido, he's one of my favorites from the original ECW.
Mm-hmm.
So several matches I could recommend from the original ECW for you to check out, for anybody to check out. I just watched a match recently from the 1999 November to Remember. It was Little Guido versus Jerry Lynn versus Tajiri,
mm-hmm,
in a three-way elimination match. And it was just as good as I remember it being. A lot of the times in the later days of ECW, they did three-way matches. It was him, Tajiri, and Super Crazy, mm-hmm, were like the main three-way matches they would do. And then he also got a couple runs with the ECW tag titles too. He three-time ECW tag team champion. Once with Tracy Smothers and twice with Tony Mamaluke.
Mm-hmm.
And also was two-time WWE Cruiserweight Champion. So he might be more well-known from WWE as Nunzio.
Mm-hmm.
If anybody listening watched WWE during the mid-2000s, he was Nunzio. And he's popped up now and then. I think he was in TNA some. I think he's done a few matches with MLW here and there. But, I mean, I haven't seen him recently, so it's good to know he's still out there. But, I mean, if you haven't seen, like, any of the FBI stuff from the original ECW, it's just so ridiculous. Little Guido is, like, he's 5'6", 169 pounds, according to Cage Match.
Mm-hmm.
And in the latter days of ECW, he was teamed up, or he had this guy with this sidekick with him, sidekick, wrestler, bodyguard, whatever, Big Sal.
Mm-hmm.
Who was 6'8", and almost 500 pounds. So quite the dichotomy there.
Right.
So, and it was just kind of like all this goofy, like, goofy comedy. Fans would chant, "Where's my pizza?" at him, you know, because he was doing like the whole, you know, Italian gimmick.
Right.
So, but Guido, he's really one of the best wrestlers, you know, you're going to find. He can do aerial stuff. He can do mat stuff. He can do hardcore. I mean, he can hang with the best of them.
Mm.
So it's nice to see that he's still out there. He's still getting, he's still wrestling at 51 years old. So he's been around forever. So if you haven't seen any Little Guido, definitely recommend going checking some out from the original ECW. The three-way matches, like I said, from him to Jerry and Super Crazy. There was one particular one that I remember standing out on an episode of ECW on TNN. This says April 8th, 2000. That sounds about right. Little Guido, Super Crazy, and Tajiri in a three-way dance, which was, you know, three-way elimination match for the ECW World Television title. And then there was a match he had at the Hammerstein. It was, let me find it here, Mikey Whipwreck and Tajiri against Little Guido and Tony Mamaluke for the vacant ECW tag team titles. And then those guys kind of wrestled around the horn the last few days of ECW. And then Guido and Mama Luke ended up losing the tag team titles to Danny Doring and Roadkill at the end of 2000. So definitely recommend, like I said, checking out some little Guido matches. Him and GCW is going to be kind of fun. So I'm excited to see that. I know he's not going to win the GCW world title.
Mm-hmm.
But still, little Guido, it's going to be fun to watch.
That'll be fun.
So, two other things we kind of want to talk about here are going to be Chris Hero is the first one we're going to talk about. And he's got a comeback match happening the day after recording this. So it'll be happening on Friday, November 17th for West Coast Pro Wrestling against Timothy Thatcher. And it's going to be live for free on YouTube. How familiar are you with Chris Hero, MX?
I recognize the name. I'm certain I have seen some matches of his. But other than that, no details beyond that.
Yeah. So he's been around for a while. A lot of fans might remember him as part of teaming with Claudio Castagnoli in Ring of Honor. I forget what their team name was. Kings of Wrestling, that's what it was. The Kings of Wrestling. Chris Hero and Claudio Castagnoli. They had some crazy matches with like the Young Bucks and World's Greatest Tag Team, people like that.
That's probably where I know Chris Hero. I've seen him in a Young Bucks match.
Yeah, when Cornette was around, booking Ring of Honor. And speaking of the Young Bucks, you corrected me on something from this last episode. We'll get back to Chris Hero in a second.
Oh yeah, yeah!
From our previous episode, yes. And no offense to Jay Fury and Spud, but they are not the Young Bucks. I got the Young Bucks confused with Jay Fury and Spud on a Ring of Honor show from Dayton in 2006. So Jay Fury and Spud, Young Bucks, if you're listening, I'm sorry I confused you with Jay Fury and Spud.
I remember hearing that, and I was just like, this will teach me to doubt my Young Bucks knowledge, because you said that they were in Ring of Honor in 2006, and I was like,
I know.
In 2006?
I know, and I said that, and I was like, well, shit, I'm messed up.
I'm like, the Young Bucks didn't even get to PWG until 2008. They didn't get to Ring of Honor until 2009, but I didn't because I wasn't sure, because everybody knows more about wrestling than me. But what I forgot is that nobody knows more about the Young Bucks than me.
No, and I will grant you that, and you have me beat on Young Bucks knowledge. So I've been to so many Ring of Honor shows there in Dayton that they all ran together, and I went back and did my research, and I was like, well, shoot, yep, she's right. MX is right. Jay Fury and Spud. That's no offense to Jay Fury and Spud.
They're great. They're not.
The match I was probably thinking of, I think it was, was it Young Bucks and Briscoes that we eventually settled on?
You saw the Young Bucks and Briscoes, which does make sense.
Yes, and I ended up having to go through my ticket stubs too to go find the guest. Yes, I still have my Ring of Honor ticket stubs from, you know, the late 2000s. So I ended up having to go through, figure out which shows I was at, and go from there. So anyway, back to Chris Hero. I don't know how we got from that to Chris, from Chris Hero to that. Anyway, Chris Hero. So he hasn't wrestled since 2020, since looks like March of 2020. That was a number one contendership battle royal on NXT UK. But he's been working backstage like with AEW and Ring of Honor before they were bought by AEW. Mm-hmm. He wrestled some for, I think he worked a little bit backstage with WWE, some too, and NXT, and is actually the booker for West Coast Pro Wrestling currently.
Okay.
So this is his comeback match after 3 years, and I can't think of a better opponent than Timothy Thatcher, because Timothy Thatcher is a machine in the ring. Have you seen any Timothy Thatcher matches?
I have seen Timothy Thatcher matches.
Okay.
Timothy Thatcher came up when he had a little excursion in AEW. And I am
given to understand
that lots of people feel very strongly about Timothy Thatcher, positively. And I am happy for them.
That's right. He did show up in AEW mm-hmm. this year. He did. He wrestled Danielson on Dynamite.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. And I only remember that because it was in Dayton, which is just up the road from me. So I remember things that happened. Well, I remember some things that happened around here. And then he wrestled, looks like he was on an early episode of the Honor Club show, wrestling Wheeler Yuta.
Right.
Yeah. So he's been making the rounds, and looks like he's wrestled some for West Coast Pro this year too. So mainly for Pro Wrestling Noah, looks like, as well. And he was in WWE, I think, the same time as Chris Hero was. He was in NXT the same time Chris Hero was.
Oh, that makes sense.
I think he wrestled, he had like some sort of big fight. He had the Fight Pit match there on NXT as well. It was him. That was the match he's probably known for in NXT. It was the Fight Pit where he had, we fought Matt Riddle and Kurt Angle was the referee in the early days of the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what I think probably a lot of people, WWE people probably recognize him from that. So, but he is a monster in the ring. I mean, he is probably one of the best technical wrestlers on the planet right now, I think.
I mean, Zack Sabre Jr. is still on the planet.
Right. Well, one of, and so is and so is Danielson. So, yeah.
My Zack Sabre Jr. fan just kind of leaped out there. Anytime anybody's like best technical wrestler, I'm like, incorrect, Zack Sabre Jr.
Well, I mean, I would like to. Has he wrestled Zack Sabre Jr.? Do you know?
It would be wild if he didn't.
Because that's a match I'd actually like to see.
It would definitely be a match worth seeing. Yeah, I don't know off the top of my head.
I don't either.
I'm not as much of a Zack Sabre Jr. fan as I am a Young Buck fan. I can't.
I'd have to scour. I'd have to do the little Oracle search on Cage Match to see if they've wrestled each other.
Yeah.
Maybe down. Maybe somewhere they have. I don't know.
Yeah.
But yes, Chris Hero, Timothy Thatcher, on the West Coast Pro YouTube channel. So check it out. That's something else we'll report back on our next episode. One of us will, at least. I don't know who. One of us might. And then just to kind of wrap things up here, I want to talk a little bit about the name change from Impact Wrestling to TNA, which was, I had that on the docket for our last episode, but we kind of started talking about other things.
How do we feel about this?
I'm actually excited about it. I mean, I think the name Impact Wrestling is fine, but to be honest with you, I feel like they're a little bit stale right now. They have been maybe for last few months.
Mm-hmm.
So I think a nice little refresh is needed.
Mm-hmm.
And then going back to the TNA name, I think that just kind of, that's good and bad connotations with that. Because you think about, when you think about TNA, some people may think about like the, you know, them bringing in all the WWE people in like the mid to late 2000s. And the Dixie Carter stuff going on and Vince Russo and all that sort of stuff. But a lot of people still call him TNA. I mean, I still call him TNA for the most part.
Mm-hmm.
So when I think of that, when I think of Impact Wrestling, I think of TNA, and there's a huge legacy behind that name. That's what they started with over 20 years ago. So NWA, TNA, Total Nonstop Action Wrestling. So I think it's a good thing, honestly.
Yeah, I think
I'm excited for it.
I think we're at the part of the cycle where people like mostly have fond nostalgic feelings for TNA.
That's what it is, yeah.
And so I can definitely see the value in bringing the name back. And I think the people who regularly watch Impact, now TNA, and have fond memories of TNA are kind of both on the same side here. I think it's aiming at their target audience.
It is
with
yeah.
this name change, which is always a good idea, in my opinion. I think you should always be aiming at your target audience. So, you know, I hope it works out for them. I love to have a wrestling world where, you know, Impact / TNA exists. I think they bring a certain kind of zaniness and absurdity to the table that's really valuable, honestly. So
They do. I mean, if you go back through the, like, the TNA archives, you see all kinds of crazy stuff.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, yeah, they were known for, they're known for the, you know, innovating the X Division and, you know, all that stuff. And then there's also the, you know, the craziness of, like, the early days of TNA. And a lot of the stuff in the Universal, like the Jackass stuff that they were doing with Vince Russo, matches between Sting and Abyss, which were just absurd.
Mm-hmm.
Like the, what was it, the Last Rites match where they fought in a cemetery or something like that. That was nuts. But yeah, I mean, there's a lot of good, there's a lot of bad, but I think, to your point, I think it's a nostalgia thing, where people are kind of like, okay, you know, they've been away from that name for a while now. They kind of washed away any bad vibes from that name. It's kind of time to bring it back. So,
yeah.
And when they announced the change, you know, a lot of the wrestlers online were like, you know, hell yes, you know, I'm excited now. I'm going to be a TNA Knockout or TNA wrestler now. So,
you know, I think that's good. I think that's good. And I'm glad it seems to me that people are broadly positive about the change. And, you know, I think that's good. You know, the name was really toxic for a while, so I think they were right to change it at the time. And I think now...
Agreed.
I think now they're right to change it back. So yeah. Good for them. And
one thing they're not going to be bringing back, though, and I saw this on their like their Facebook Live thing they did about it, they're not bringing back the six-sided ring. So
okay. That,
there may be some people out there who want the six-sided ring, but they said they're not going to bring it back for safety reasons.
I saw a couple of matches in the six-sided ring. You may guess that they were Young Bucks matches. And
the Fish Market Street Fight, which you saw in the six-sided ring.
Oh, thank you so much for reminding me.
I'm sorry. That was floundering away in my head this whole time.
Adam, I swear to God.
You're going to kick me off this podcast,
aren't you? I am. I'm going to fire you from this podcast. But
you're welcome.
What I was saying is that I'm not sure that I'm not sure that the six-sided ring brings enough to the table to justify the weird and confusingness. And you said for safety reasons, were there injuries as a result?
Yeah, so I think it was like on the Facebook live chat, I think that there was one of the questions popped up, are you bringing back the six-sided ring? And Scott D'Amore was on there. It was him and Tom Hannifin, and Scott D'Amore flat out said, no, we're not bringing it back. He said there's a lot of wrestlers that they feel it's harder. Mm-hmm. When they take a bump, it's harder on their bodies.
Yeah.
And they just don't, you know, it's a four-sided ring, I guess, is much safer than a six-sided ring. I don't know all the logistics or anything like that, but that's just what they said, or what Scott D'Amore said.
Yeah, and like, you know, as a viewer, I'm not entirely sure what the six-sided ring like brings to the table as far as like visual interest or like interesting mechanics to add to matches. You know what I mean?
I think when they first did it, it was like to make him a little bit more unique, make him stand out a little bit more.
Yeah, but it's like it's pretty hollow.
It is. And that was their thing for a long time till Hogan and Bischoff came in, was the six-sided ring. You know, they were the promotion at the six-sided ring. That's what they were known for. So, and then they went back to the standard ring, and then they brought back the six-sided ring one more time after that, and I don't know, that's when I wasn't watching Impact. But they are bringing in Zack Sabre Jr.
Hell yeah.
For their final resolution, which is their last show under the Impact banner. So it's Zack Sabre Jr. and Josh Alexander against the Motor City Machine Guns.
Let's go!
That's gonna be great match. That's gonna be so good. So good. So I
approve of this message.
And I approve of this podcast. I think that's all the stuff we had on the docket for the day. We got through everything.
We sure did. That was a brilliant segue. I'm very impressed by that segue.
I'm getting better at this podcast thing.
You're doing
don't fire
great
me
at
yet.
This podcasting thing.
Don't fire me yet.
Well, we'll see. We'll see how many fish puns you have and bring it up at your next quarterly review.
See, I'll find the I'll go to the dollar store, get the joke book, we'll go from there.
Yeah. But until then, this has been On the Indies. I hope you had a great time with us. We had a great time recording. Thank you for listening to On the Indies. Please check out the other podcasts on the Wrestlin' Network: All Elite Listening, Flight of Five, Ace Techers, Ocean Cyclone Show, Puravision, Tokyo Joshi Freedom Fighters, and ChocoCast, plus our Patreon-exclusive shows like Into the Wrestleverse, New Japan, and more. Check us out on Patreon or just search Wrestlin' wherever you listen to podcasts. You can find me on Twitter at FakeSportFeel sometimes, occasionally.
The hellscape that is Twitter, mm-hmm. or X, or whatever it's called today.
It's Twitter.
Yeah, you can find me on Twitter at WriterAdam84 and also at History of HWA. History of HWA is also on Instagram now, if you're on that thing. I don't post on there too much, but trying to get better at it. History of HWA, or I can't even plug my own Substack. Anyway, go to at History of HWA on Twitter. Click the little link in the bio to give you a link to all the History of HWA stuff I work on, including a link to the Substack that you can sign up for free and get in your email every Sunday morning at 10 a.m. I have not missed one yet since March.
You should sign up for that. It's awesome.
You should. It would make my day if you signed up for it, because I got a lot of cool stuff I'm planning on doing next year on it. Like, just recently, I did a full deep dive into another local promotion that HWA worked with called Buckeye Pro Wrestling. I found all their results and all their title histories and put them and compiled them all and sent them out there on the Substack. So if you're into that sort of stuff, you know, HWA, and it's affiliated promotions that they did business with, their other stuff, you know, jump on there and sign up, please.
Yes, definitely do that. And we will see you guys next time.
Mm-hmm. All right. Bye.
Boom. Nailed it.
Mm-hmm. It's still recording.